professor at Touro University, College of Osteopathic Medicine in Vallejo, California. Welcome. And the next speaker is Do Smith.
Okay.
He's a certified advanced rolfer working on structural integration. And the next speaker is Mr. Gabriel Posner. He's a HANA somatics educator and body therapist and instructor at National Holistic Institute. The last speaker is Mr. Michael Brightwood. He's a craniosacral therapist, long-time practitioner of craniosacral therapist. Thank you for all of you coming here today. I'd like you to introduce yourself, including the reason why did you choose this career path.
How long do you want? it wasn't a short road for me. That was somewhat problematic in that went to high school. I graduated from school in Palo Alto, good education, and basically trying to figure out where you want to go at that point. I did a college aptitude test, and it came out the only ones above 90% were veterinarian. I loved animals and people. I thought, okay, that one sounds good. Physician, I didn't like doctors, so that didn't sound good. And osteopath, I'd never heard of it. So I thought, okay, I'd forget that one. So the only one left there that made any sense above 90% was to go through and look at veterinary medicine. So I applied and got into Davis. And within, the first couple of weeks, maybe 2 months, I was like, spending the rest of my life chipping tartar off two poodle's teeth was not my idea. So I thought, okay, now what do I do? I've just exhausted everything else. So I went through a couple of majors. I looked at wildlife and fisheries biology. I love the outdoors, but I'm not a hunter, so hanging around a lot of people that shot deer and things, and I've got no problems with harvesting animals in an intelligent way, but that wasn't the group of people that really resonated with me either. So I thought, okay. I was wandering to the library one day, pulled out the college blue book, and pulled out one and said, okay, let's go through categories. I found nature. The only degree under nature was natural history interpretation. So what the heck is natural history interpretation? Only school that offered it was University of Michigan. So I transferred to University of Michigan. So I left California, went to Michigan, because people said, oh, it's like the Berkeley of the Midwest. Well, it's interesting, but saying it's the Berkeley of the Midwest is sort of an interesting, it's an interesting place. And for Michigan, it is the Berkeley of the Midwest, but it's not Berkeley, it's in the Midwest. So I love the school, but it was interesting, and new habitats, the bogs and the natural history, loved that part, and finished my degree. I worked in the summers in the city of Palo Alto as a counselor in the city day camp, and I was, even though I was brought up Catholic, I was the only counselor in a Jewish camp that was sponsored by the San Francisco Community Center here, and liked what I was doing, and so I had a job lined up after I finished. Well, just before graduation, the person decided to make the full-time position to half-time position with no benefits, so I said, grad school. So, switched career and went through a program in biology, a master's in biology, and they said, you don't have any organic chemistry? And I said, no. He said, well, why not? I said, because I didn't want to take it. So he said, well, I don't know how you got through without it, but you're not going to get through without the graduate degree, and you're not going to get any credit for it. It's an undergraduate class. So he said, I would suggest you go over to Eastern Michigan University and take it before you start, because you can take the whole year in 8 weeks. So I went over there. I liked what I heard over there. So I applied to their program and got accepted as well, and they offered me a teaching scholarship. I thought, okay, Michigan, no teaching scholarship. They don't care about master's degrees candidates. All they care about is doctorate candidates. Or Eastern, not as prestigious, but a better program in terms of what I like. So I enrolled in both of them. Didn't tell either one I was at the other place and just did both of them. So I loved the teaching. That part I really did enjoy. And so when I finished with two master's degrees in biology, my first job interview, you know, I'm proud of the fact that I had two, and person said, I noticed you have two master's degrees in biology. I said, yes, and he said, is that a little redundant? I thought, okay, so I guess that didn't work. But ended up going down to Virginia, taught in Michigan for 3 years, went down to Virginia and taught there for 4 years. And my salary there after, started there 3 years of teaching experience, two master's degrees, for a grand total of $10,200.
Oh, man.
Loved what I was doing, loved the students, but I was just above poverty level. So I thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. So I had a back injury and went to see a chiropractor. And this was a chiropractor who was a chiropractic and osteopathy go way, way back to their, both their origins. Chiropractic came out of an interaction between Palmer and Still in the 1800s. And basically, at that point, you know, Still's idea was, I'm a physician, that was his background and training. I don't like this, the drugs that are in use today. This is, again, we're talking middle of the 1800s. And he was against immunizations because of the allergic response and a number of other problems with immunizations. And so he had a lot of physicians that came to him because they wanted to learn from him, but there are a number of them that said, this guy's crazy, we've got to stay clear of him. So the profession was sort of a renegade profession from its onset. And I looked at chiropractic, found the license a little bit too limited because I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do with it. So I wanted to keep my options open. And the chiropractor said, look, if you want to learn how to manipulate, you need to become a DC. If you want to become a physician, become an MD. Don't try and do both. And I thought, but that's what I like about osteopathy. I like this integration between the body work and the traditional medicine. So trying to walk that line, it can be a real challenge today because you have that same polarity existing today. From the time Still started the profession in the 1800s, there are people trying to push him toward the allopathic model, and there are other people trying to keep him toward his model, which was, as long as you have good structural health, the body has a better chance of resisting immunity, staying in better health, and that's not just my neck doesn't hurt, that is my bowels function better, my lungs can breathe better, my asthma is down. So it is a whole looking at that. And it's been interesting that a number of the other professions, Rolfing, for instance, Ida Rolf, a lot of her work came out of an osteopath that she expanded on. Craniosacral therapy, Upplinger is a DL that came out of Michigan State and found the Upplinger Institute. So there are a number of other body work areas. The PTs that do a lot of body work came out of the osteopathic tradition. But many DLs don't follow that same tradition. So we have this dichotomy between, do I want to be a physician or do I want to integrate these? And it's really, really confusing to a lot of students and a lot of DOs. It's not confusing to me, it just pisses me off. But because that's why I became a DL. I wanted the two of them. And that's what I enjoyed and embraced about the profession, was this idea of trying to integrate the two. For many students, it's a tough career path for this reason. Many people want to say, I want to be a traditional osteopath. I want to manipulate. I want to do body work. But I don't want to do all that medicine. And what I counsel those people to do is to say, you need to look at why you want to be a DO. If you only want to do body work, don't just look at osteopathy. Look at Rolfing. Look at chiropractic. Look at massage therapy. Look at a number of other areas that do high-quality body work. Because if you're going to be an osteopathic physician, your perspective needs to be from that of a physician that integrates the manipulative work into the care of patients, which can be really challenging. But it's one that, it's the reason that I became a DO, and so that's the middle short story.
No, is it true that, of osteopaths, only about 2% actually do manipulation?
It depends on how you ask the questions in which group. In other words, if you ask the question, how many of you have given a manipulative treatment in the last year, did it with surgeons, and 70% say yes. And then when they started asking who they manipulated, it was colleagues, family members for the most part, and it was down to about 3 to 5% of who actually worked on patients. Mm-hmm. So within the profession, the largest number that manipulate are family physicians and osteopathic physicians that do a specialty area with osteopathic manipulative medicine. Throughout the profession, the numbers that manipulate are, in the 10-12% at best. So yeah, so it's not like 90% do manipulation. So it's, that part is again frustrating in that you have this potential that we haven't realized, and instead we've abdicated in many cases to becoming the physician, who did some manipulation in school and maybe in their training, but haven't kept it up. That's my frustration.
Thank you, Dr. Wilbur. How about you, Mr. Smith?
Okay. I got lost when I was in college, and I had a really profound experience of it. And at the time, I actually thought, well, maybe I want to become a law firm. And so I applied to the Roth Institute, and they, at that time, didn't actually want to train anybody else in California because they already have too many law firms in California. And so I allowed myself to become discouraged. It was too bad. So I went off and did a bunch of other things for a while. One of which was be a construction contractor, actually, for quite a number of years. And my joke is that I now remodel people instead of buildings. I finally got to the point after a while, and I thought, you know, this dream of being a Rolfer is still there. I think I'm going to drop this other stuff and go and do that. And which, in some ways, I think is really an important factor. Nowadays, like, the Rolf Institute will take people, you know, right out of college or whatever, and you can train to be a Rolfer. But I found actually that having life experience is a pretty good background for doing this kind of work. Because it isn't just a matter of touching someone's tissue or messing with their tendons or manipulating them. It's also the fact that you're dealing, if Rolfing is a holistic enterprise, you're dealing with the whole person. And you're dealing with all of their experience, all of their history, their emotions, their spiritual life. Not everybody goes there, but, you know, I have to be prepared when I work with someone if that's what I'm doing. And so, for me at any rate, having that kind of interval of time where I prepared myself without really thinking about it in that way has served me well to be a Rolfer. So I finally went back after a long period of time and went to the Rolf Institute and became a Rolfer.
Let's see. I guess I took kind of a short path to get into somatic education. In high school, I guess, the two things I found most fascinating in high school were psychology and the humanities. I love this idea of art and culture and the structures of society kind of forming and melding each other. I had one teacher who said that society is the sum total of its parts, and you can't discount one part over the other. And I thought that was really fascinating. I also didn't see any way that I could do anything with that. And I also, it's a great idea. But I loved psychology. I loved also like thinking about like Freud and about abnormal things and why it is that people start misbehaving in society, start doing things that are dysfunctional in some way. And so I went to Ithaca College in upstate New York, and I went to a Bachelor of Science program in applied psychology and sort of human resource management, and it was sort of a broad thing that got into communications, blah blah blah. And I found it very quantitative. I found it very about like trying to answer questions about things happening internally through numbers and through statistics and through graphs and everything, and I got really disenchanted with the whole process. And at the same time, I started taking philosophy courses and politics courses, and the war in Iraq was starting up again. And I decided I was done with it. And so I finished, luckily I was graduating at that point, so I finished my degree very frustrated and thought, all right, I've learned a lot about the mind. I wanted to just get my hands on people and just start like trying to help people. And so I went through a massage program out in Emeryville. And I just started working with people. And as I started working with people, I started getting a lot of pains. And a lot and a lot and a lot of pains. And I was getting massage, and I was getting acupuncture, and I was getting chiropractic adjustments, and wasn't really solving the problems. And I was finding with massage, I wasn't really solving people's problems. And that was kind of frustrating for me. I wasn't actually getting the answers that I was really looking for, why it is that these things happen. And luckily somebody, a colleague, actually turned me on to a book that Thomas Hanna wrote called Somatics. And you guys, people are familiar?
Yeah.
Awesome. And so I read the book, and I just did the movements. I followed step by step, the movements in the back of his book. And in about 2 weeks, I was feeling amazing. And I started just thinking, like, listening to the way he talked and the philosophy, and he was like, he was answering all these questions that I had, and he was just like, it was like he was singing to me, like Roberta Flack. And so I started thinking about these things, and if you don't know Thomas Hanna, the creator, the developer of these techniques, he didn't design them, he kind of like discovered them, put words to them. He was an existentialist philosopher, and he taught religious studies, and he taught, he helped him and his wife opened up the humanistic psychology program here in San Francisco. And then he developed these somatic techniques that came out of Feldenkrais theories and Alexander theories. And I went through the training program. It's a 3-year training program. And it's, it's been absolutely amazing. So I found like it was that bridge between my psychology studies and my massage studies and allowed me to think about these humanity questions in terms of how does that relate to when someone comes in like this, what does that have to do with the society around them? Mm-hmm. And how can you shift the society around them by helping them?
Thank you. I'm Michael Brightwood, and I'm currently practicing biodynamic craniosacral therapy. And I began doing body work as a teenager. I'd hurt myself on the trampoline, and so got a book because I always wanted massage, and I learned how to do massages and did massage trades. So that was always sort of running through my life, putting hands on and doing trades with people. And my first career was as a Montessori school teacher, which was very interesting. And I moved on to, when that couldn't support my family, I became a contractor and did historical building restoration. And as I got close to my 40s, I wanted to move into the healing arts. My dad was an MD, and it always felt like I really couldn't embrace it fully while he was, every time I'd bring home a conversation about something, like, oh, it's a bunch of quackery. And then I showed him kinesiology, muscle testing. And there's a thing where you can turn somebody's strength off and it goes, whoa. Then you turn it back on, it goes, dink. And I said, what do you think that was? I'm gonna have to think about that. So it began a place where we could at least have a conversation. There's something else going on. And I went through my own midlife crisis and got a lot of help out of counseling, so I decided to do body-centered counseling and picked up humanistic counseling and some Comey-like work. And I was in England at the time and got Bell's palsy, where half your face sags because the cranial nerve was gone. And the MD says, oh, here, have some steroids, it'll clear up in 6 months or not. You can come and see me in 6 months and we'll see if it's cleared up or not. So I went off to an acupuncturist and said, yeah, no problem. Come in a couple times a week for a few months and we'll clear this up. But you might want to see a craniosacral therapist. And I never heard of that. Now, I'd taken, in those intervening years, shiatsu training, deep tissue work, sports massage. So I had a fair amount of hands-on stuff. So I had sort of in my mind that there's going to be some kind of physical hands-on thing going on. First thing that she did is put her hands on my feet. Thinking, oh, that's okay. 10 minutes. Then she said, how about if I put my hand under your sacrum? She'll cheat bone and then lay your back. I'm thinking, what's she doing with her hand on my butt? And then she came up to my head and I'm thinking, okay, now we're gonna get going. You always, as a body worker, when people are working on you, if they have like a new little, I have to remember that, brings her hands and it looks like laying on of hands. She has her hand on my head. I'm thinking, well, this is good. She's got her hands on my head. Nothing. Well, when are you going to get started? Oh, I've been going the whole time. Okay, a little skeptic meters up, sort of red line. About 15 more minutes, I thought, what? This is it. Nothing's really happening. She says, no, can you hang out a few more minutes? I'd paid for an hour. So, yeah, sure. About 5 minutes later, heard a pop in what I'm assuming is my eustachian tube. Heard glug, 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 glug as fluids get drained out of my inner ear. This whole rush of energy down my arm and across my face, my face turned back on. I thought, oh my God, what was she doing? What was that? So I finished my counseling training, went off. I was living in England where the fellow that sort of synthesized the biodynamic approach to craniosacral therapy lives. and interviewed and got into the course. And I remember the very first lecture, in about 10 minutes, and he says, you know, he was telling about what it is, and you know, that it's tracking the pulsations generated by the central nervous system, and you can feel, depending on where you focus your attention, you can feel tissues moving, or you can feel this wave phenomena coming through the fluids, or you can actually palpate the biofield that's generated by the central nervous system. And he said, you know, everybody sort of had, we got to the biofield part, we had sort of this, what's going on? This isn't magic, folks. I thought, just the kind of thing a wizard would say to throw you off. And not very much has gone on to dissuade me, because you know, it is in a way, you're tapping in and generating, facilitating the self-corrective component of the central nervous system. You become the biofeedback technician, where you're feeding back to the central nervous system to generate a self-healing response, just as needles, acupuncture needles do that in the body, so can a craniosacral therapist. And the thing that I find the most rewarding is, as a massage therapist, you could give somebody the best massage of their life, and 2 weeks later, they want it again. And it's still there. They come in, it's the same place every week. You know, you have your client, you know, group, you know where it is. They want it there, they want it the same way. Oh, yeah, oh, and then they go with a big smile because you've generated an endorphin response. You work on an area. And, but, you know, like I say, next time they come back in, it's still there. Well, and when I was doing counseling, same thing. Take years sometimes, couple, 3 years before the pattern. Oh, yeah, I see that pattern. I do this, and then this happens, and yeah. It still hasn't fixed it. That takes longer, and it just takes forever. Craniosacral therapy can work with the body and the way the psychology works, but you can begin to disconnect the biochemistry from the memory. And it's the most efficient use of my time that I've come across as far as healing, because people come in with chronic pain, 3, 5, sometimes 1 session, people go, pain's not there. And, you know, sometimes with the carpal tunnel, you know, it's been painful for, you know, years and years. And in 2 or 3 weeks, the pain is gone and doesn't come back. And that's what I like. And it's really, I'm sort of cheating by being here in the physical medicine modality, because the biodynamic folks have, while we learn cranial osteopathy and as taught by the Upledger Institute, we're also working, and it's called energy medicine now. And as far as the last question on that piece, the future for energy medicine is big. And I get a lot of satisfaction from having people come in with chronic stuff, stuff's been around for a long time, and then in a fairly short period of time, depending on what the issue is, and if there's a big emotional piece also, it lightens things up and dissipates and resolves.
Thank you.